おはよ
おはよう。
う。
I am absolutely loaded with food.
Loaded with food? What?
Like I ate prior to our conversation, and now I feel like, I don't know, I carved too much. I had a full bagel and
Nice.
some other sweets, and as in AKA chocolate. And coffee, and I brewed the new coffee that you gifted me for an extra boost. But now I'm feeling like lethargic from all the carbs. Anyway, what's happening?
I'm enjoying my coffee too, morning coffee. For me, my morning Wednesday is the day I have Pilates. And since it's raining here all week, we're expected rain, which it's amazing because it hasn't, I feel like it hasn't rained for like over a year and a half. So we need it. So we did Pilates over Zoom, just did some stretching for 30 minutes. So, and then I changed it up a little bit in terms of my meditation. Referred back to this online course through Commune by Sharon Salzberg, and I did a centering guided meditation for 10 minutes. So it was something different.
Nice. How many people are in your Pilates?
Oh, just a one-on-one from my friend teaches, so it's like a private class I do with my friend.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Did you go
And
through your inbox this morning?
I actually didn't. I'm proud of
Oh.
myself. I mean, I guess I'm proud of myself as in, I have a daily task list, which I don't follow because I get into the vortex of things. But the only way is to, close one task at a time. Otherwise, they just start snowballing. So, so I was just figuring out some things for QDTs. And I figured it out, although it took me a while. But anywho,
Well,
yeah.
congratulations
Thank
on
you.
your anniversary. You want to share a little bit
Yeah,
about your key to tease journey?
it feels surreal, but real all at the same time because time is something that we just can't control. So when I look back at the year, I've certainly learned so much. And there's so much more to go. So I think ultimately it's like, knowing what your North Star is going to be very important. Because there's just so much chatter and noise. So I come back to what is it that I'm trying to achieve? And ultimately, it's not about me or the brand or the portfolio per se, but it is about being the steward of these amazing teas, and how the industry just over the century. Just a century. It's tea is 5,000-year-old history, and just a century, it got commoditized to the extent of corporate greed coming into play. And as you know, it benefited. It's basically cheaper, more convenient tea in tea bags and lower quality and mass produced. And pretty much has kind of, just waned the quality. And all of us who are in the specialty sector is, trying to protect this, stewards of what we've inherited and how we can pass it on. Without it getting not extinct isn't the word, but for it to be so far gone. Yeah, so that's the goal. And I guess for that to happen, the branding and the portfolio has to come. But it keeps me grounded. And I'm just so thankful for friends like you who have acknowledged like the special oolongs, like Miti flowery oolong and its meaning beyond me, and kind of that intergenerational. It's a good representation of what was lost, but we can still protect it. So you were the first one to purchase it, actually. Like, it wasn't moving, and you were the first one to purchase it. And for those listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, is that it's a single origin tea from Vietnam, where Vietnam was and still produces, through, I guess, minority farmers, amazing quality teas. A producer purveyor based in Vietnam has protected. And I got to know them through really searching on the internet, and also reading articles about them. So I can import the tea, and you were the first person to purchase it. And then from there, it just webbed, and it's the best-selling oolong that I have.
Yay.
Yeah, so that's just a sign from the universe to keep on going. One tea at a time. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. I mean, I think, I grew up drinking tea, of course, growing up in Japan, and but I think thanks to you, I have this newfound appreciation for specialty teas, and especially particularly yours with this oolong tea and the story you've shared. There's something about that's why stories are so powerful, right? Like, I make the connection when I brew it to your story, and I'm already tearing up. It's like so powerful to know, like, because you share yourself through your teas and this particular oolong tea. And I don't know, I find it powerful when I pour it and I drink it, and there's something more beyond, that I feel like I'm connecting to when I'm brewing and enjoying the tea. So,
Thank you.
yeah.
What's the tell me more about growing up in Japan, what has your tea experience been like? What did you have? What do you remember from it?
I don't think I was much of a tea drinker growing up. I mean, we would have like store-bought bottled, right? Like ocha and urongcha in the bottle. Maybe my mom would do like mugicha with the sack, right? Like the tea bags. But my mom would brew like more recently now, like whenever she comes to visit, she enjoys tea. But it's just like Yamamoto Yama, like, right? Like nothing special. I mean, it's for us, that's just the store-bought, readily available teas that my mom would brew. And it's special because I get to sit down and enjoy tea with her, right? Like that's a moment that I can picture in my mind, say at my sister's house, and we're enjoying tea together. A shared moment. Not that we're, we're not having any deep conversations or anything like that, but sharing a cup of tea with my mother, like that's meaningful.
That's interesting how you just like smoothly said Yamamoto Yama. Like, why? I wonder why Yamamoto Yama. I mean, I know I can assume, but Yamamoto Yama in California? Or Yamamoto Yama in Japan, in
I think
California.
those are Jap the things that were made in Japan. Isn't that, is it? Well, I don't know the, I think it isn't it Yamamoto-yama the like big brand of tea?
No,
Am
they
I?
are, but I'm curious whether you remember drinking them in Japan or in the US.
Oh, in Japan. I mean, like it's
Oh,
from
okay.
Japan. My mom would bring, like, even in like if she's visiting LA, she'll bring tea leaves from Japan. Like, so-so-こだわりがあって, you know. Kodawari, I don't know how to translate that, but you know, she wouldn't want to buy Japanese tea here. You know, there are things that she will bring from Japan every time she visits, right? Because even soy sauce, like, it's not the same. So for her, she'll bring those condiments and necessary things that she enjoys when she comes and stays, but.
Interesting. All right. That's going to be like a subject to my podcast with Kita Tees. All
Oh,
right. Okay. Well, I think you had a good point on kind of like we only touched the tip of the iceberg on intergenerational relationships, which I think you touched upon already by remembering having tea with your sister and your mother. Casual conversation. And those are the, yeah, those are so cherished. I think I wrote about something like that yesterday. Yeah, I wrote, oh, because I did, anyway, sorry, through Kita Tees. Like my business is dedicated to my mom because she's been so, influential. Is there's more than that in my life. Yeah. And I wanted to share with you, I think, yeah, so we only just touched the tip of the iceberg on unpacking that. And since we last spoke last week, oh my gosh, I had a major verbal fight with my daughter, 17-year-old daughter. And it's mostly, I think the most, mostly bad on me, which I'm not proud about because it pertains to things that I guess, you know how we keep on moving forward. We live in the present, but then we keep on kind of like, I guess I assume that, I mean, I try not to assume that tomorrow comes, but then tomorrow comes and I keep on moving forward versus looking back. And conveniently, I have kind of bottled and wrapped the negative things about my past life. So like example is like I'm divorced. And I've moved forward, and we've all moved ho forward as successful as we could be. But then there are still unclosed things that get triggered, that sort of get triggered by small things. And then when you look deep within yourself, it's like, oh, shoot, like I don't have closure to that moment in my time or life. And I'm like dragging it on. And I guess it's like a worse thing because, we have two children together and they are, they are a representation of our love. But when you're divorced, certainly something is broken. And those, my children are going to carry them on in eternity. And the last thing that I need to do is to feed that, not feed the fact that I couldn't make it work. So anyway, so that was the big what that big fight was about. So I think what you shared in terms of, compassion to self, loving self, and then I guess understanding the triggers and how to deal with it. I mean, it can only come through practice. And what I'm proud about is that, I mean, I initially dismissed her feelings. And I'm not good about that. I've dismissed my husband's feelings. I've dismissed my children's feelings. And that's something that, my goodness, that they've been patient about.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter just was like, this is how, like, you dismiss my feelings and that's not. So I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I gotta go back upstairs and embrace her, listen to her, hear her.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Versus I think in the past I would have just, yeah, dismissed it and moved on. And obviously there would be no closure whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our, you know, in a very indirect or direct way, like our conversations have helped. And especially how you've shared, you know, your triggers and what we carry from the past and how you've been learning through meditation and compassion mm-hmm. practice on how to deal and become better.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. I'm glad to hear that you were able to continue the conversation with your daughter and then come to a place that you feel like you're both healing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because that's so hard, especially when you're in the moment. You're triggered and a lot of the trauma reading that I'm doing, if you're triggered and you don't have access to your logical brain, right? Your cortex, and to be able to somehow calm down and hear and communicate with your daughter and come to a meaningful, not closure. I don't know if we ever have closure. Like, that's not a word that I like or want to use in this moment, but more like you said, healing. It's so powerful. I mean, my daughter is 10, and so, you know, I always think about what it's going to be like when she's older and you're in it with your daughter. So senpai can learn from you.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate you actually explaining the science of it, of with the cortex and how when we're triggered, we don't access that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I actually had no idea.
Yeah, biologically, we cannot access that higher logical thinking brain when we're, you know, whether it's fear or we're, or, you know, our emotions are heightened, right? That's like our fight or flight. When we're triggered, we're in that fight or flight kind of biologically reacting to whatever's happening, right? And you have these heightened sensory and all that. So,
Well, remind me, it's so funny because, why do I say it's so funny all the time? Because I have a lack of vocabulary, articulation. It's not funny, but interesting that I have a daughter who's younger than your daughter, because I didn't think I was going to have a third child. I wanted it, but I wanted the opportunity to come. I don't remember too much of the past. Yet again, it's like you keep on moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it in your daughter-mom relationship, like with your daughter, 10-year-old? What are the kind of, do you have, I think you shared in terms of, I guess, disciplining or table manners?
Mm-hmm.
Are some things that kind of
yeah, the
trigger, not trigger, but tick you off.
Yeah, things that what we clash about. So two things that come to mind. One is a book that I just reread. It's a book I read when Mina was younger, maybe when she was a toddler, that I would highly recommend to you and our listeners. And that book is called Everyday Blessings, The Inner Work of Mindful Parenting by Myla and Jon Kabat-Zinn.
Hmm.
And so rereading this and really connecting that to like the importance of meditation and that practice and the cultivation of presence and not being reactive. And I think in our reading of Pema, the refraining, right? I think you noted in our past conversations how that really resonated with you, to refrain, and how hard it is to do that in the moment. So all this coming together, I feel like, and this week, we had a moment that we clashed where she was at her friend's house, outdoors, of course, and masked, and she was going to walk herself home before dinner, right? It's only like a block away, her friend's house. And so we agreed and said, okay, you should be home around 6. And then I had asked a question, should I be, you know, by the curb when she walks back to my husband? And I think he misunderstood or misheard me as like standing on the curb down the block. And he just said, oh, I'll go do it. And so before we got the chance to, like, we didn't know that was, there was this misunderstanding. He just said, oh, I'll go. And so I thought he would just go on the sidewalk to keep an eye. He walked actually a block down to the block. And of course, my 10-year-old was furious with me. When she came home, she was so mad and like, not just mad, she was like teary. I could tell that it was hurtful to her. And she was just like, I thought you trusted me, and just like kind of rushed into her room. And it was like, I wasn't prepared for that at all. And I asked my husband, what happened. And at that point, I noticed that he was walking back from the corner. And so kind of put two and two together that like, he wasn't just on the street. He went to kind of go pick her up. And hence I understood her, understood why she was so upset. But I think I was able to, because of my meditation practice and all this particular book, to really like take to heart the pain that she exhibited in her tears and anger, and really take that to heart versus like what I would have done would be like, come back here, like, you know, like insist on having a conversation, or like have a negative reaction to her anger. So I think I was able to breathe, and I just knew that I couldn't engage right now anyway. And so we were able to just give her some space. And I think I'm just not there yet to, I made the decision to just like stay away, because I know I can be triggered, and I didn't want to do or say anything that I would later regret. And so my husband's much better. And obviously he wasn't like emotionally heightened from this engagement. So I kind of leaned on him and say, is it okay if I just go read and go to bed? So at least for me, I guess I'm not there yet where I can like, quote unquote, deal with it or handle it or like address it right then and there. But at least I knew to take pause and know that, like, I don't think I can do this right now. And then had Tim take over, basically. And then I think I was able to talk to her, like, calmly. And she was by then, you know, the next day calm, and just explained to her, like, I think Papa misunderstood what I was trying to say. And I think I want to communicate to her that it's not that I don't trust her, and it's I think we've had past conversations with my daughter already about sometimes the way you react is more about me more than anything and nothing to do with her. And so I think for this particular thing, I think it's deeply rooted in my fear, right? My mind often goes to the worst case scenario, even for just, you know, it's like crazy how my mind works. And I need to work on my own fears about the worst case scenario that could happen when my 10-year-old is walking home alone from school or from a friend's house, like a couple blocks, like that I need to work on that.
Totally. Oh, so wonderful. It's like a beginning, middle, and end. Thank you for sharing. How did, I'm curious, how did Tim deal with it that evening?
I think he's really good, right? He's a high school teacher. He deals with teenagers all the time, and that's his entire career. So he's really good. He's just like personality-wise, he's just an easygoing, mellow, like patient person. And so he understands, and it's his default, like if she is upset, like you don't push it, like there's no point, right? Like she can't hear us, like. And so he just gives her space, and then when she's ready, he'll engage and do activities or talk about something else. He's really good with bringing humor or storytelling. I don't know what he did that that evening. I think they ended up playing guitar.
Aww.
She's been more and more interested in learning to play guitar. She does violin at school. And so I think that was, yeah, he's really good about understanding that whether the emotional reaction is momentary, and just to have patience to let the patience and for her to have space. And then you know, 10 times out of 10, like she's fine in 10, 15, however many minutes. And then she comes out and she's herself, right? Like, unlike adults, kids are able to like work through whatever it is they're feeling, and then they're done, right? They don't harbor it. And so I think he just understands that intuitively, so that they do, you know, find a story to read or play the guitar that night. Yeah.
It's so sweet. I could totally envision. I actually could totally put myself into Mina-chan's shoes and be angry and teary. And then I can also understand your perspective, and I could see how Tim mitigated the evening, all of it. I just, yeah, so, and everything stems from love. And indeed, yeah, I'm not trying to simplify the occurrence, but it is definitely just love manifested and then miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find it interesting that I feel like, okay, so like my littlest one is 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
And even since like the day they're born, I mean, the day they're born and for like the first year that where they're completely dependent on you for food and survival,
mm-hmm.
that be a time. But then after that, like as soon as they start walking, it is all about trying to, you know, have their independence.
Mm.
It's amazing as human beings that I think we are built with the innate sense to survive.
Mm.
And everything is a challenge. And I'd be so frustrated. I like how many times I have to say no to my child as a parent, because your job is to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but if I were, you know, the baby, I'd be like, stop!
I want to do this!
Yeah. So these days, I think I've had practice. I may have had practice with my older kids. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if she's choosing what she wants to wear instead of I think previously I've been like, this is what you're going to wear. I give her one other choice. So it's like, do you wear this one or this one? And then, you know, she, like, her eyes just brightly shine and, you know, because you're giving her a choice.
Right.
But, you know, like to you, you mentioned, because I have the older kids, like my son was very calm. I mean, he wasn't like a social butterfly per se. So I didn't have to worry about him too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, I think he's still very mature. And despite his frontal lobes not being fully developed yet, he can make good decisions. Thus far. Maybe he's gonna be a late bloomer. But like with my 17-year-old, man, you're gonna just brace yourself as soon as they start driving. Because that's where all your, you know, meditation and compassion is gonna come into practice.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more. I mean, death and life moments when they start driving, and in this country you have to drive. But yeah, it's interesting how, like, you know, my daughter's curfew is 10:30. It's supposed to be 10:30. But there are moments, like last night and the other night, she came home at 11. And thankfully I have the 360 app. Where you can know, you know exactly. Do you know about it? You know exactly where your child is.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, 360. It's free. It's a free app.
Mm-hmm.
You just put it, if she has a phone, smartphone or what have you, you put it on hers. And I'm so thankful. My son, my college, second year college son, has not turned his off.
Mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what time he gets home to his dorm. And what have you. But the funny thing is, if you can remember back to, like, I remember when I was 17, I was barely home. So it's like the whole, it's interesting how life cycles and works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm like, holy cow. Like I obviously, like, my mother was almost hospitalized for the behavior that, and just really crap that I gave her. When I was a 17-year-old, because that was like the heart of 16, 17 was like the bad relationship. And I remember having a curfew of 10:30, but I think there were times when, like, I came home later, and obviously there's no internet and smartphones and
yeah.
So I gave my mother especially a hard time. And here I am, you know.
Yeah.
I get to drink my own poison, or whatever the American expression is, or Western idiom is. Anyway.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you remember? Well, you're not there.
Well, I have to say our norms in Japan and here are very different. Two different, you know, countries and cultures and norms. So that right there, I think, is a big difference, wouldn't you say, in terms of the practices and norms again?
Well, about driving, yeah, for sure.
That
I think that comes to mind. And yeah, a good point in the sense, like, I have, since I didn't drive and we didn't need to drive in Tokyo, you have no experience or practice on how to be. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Somehow we've come this far. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, clearly our home environment, like, like completely different. Like, I don't think I had a curfew, you know, so there's that. So
yeah. That was your house.
Yeah, our house. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what does that mean? Does that mean, like, you just came home whenever you went home? Or did you go home?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were pretty free. I mean, I would stay over a friend's house. I just needed to call and let them know, you know. We were pretty, our house rules were not strict at all, like almost non-existent.
Well, here's the thing then. It's like, I guess the question is to your mother, which you can only presume is like, were you like, how did you deal as a veteran mom, I guess? I guess that's, yeah, the question too is like, what was the decision that made you not, you trusted your children enough for them not to have a curfew, and why weren't you afraid or scared or like, yeah, just curious.
I think she was raised that way too, right? Like, I mean, freedom is great, independence is great, but the flip side of it, I mean, this is me, having read a lot of trauma, you know, being books on trauma and stuff, like, this is me just thinking out loud and questioning, like, it's fine line of neglect too, in my mind. And of course, I'm sure, but to be fair though, my parents' parents, so my grandparents' generation and my parents, like growing up, you know, being Korean and raised in Japan, I think what their day-to-day and norms very different from my experience of like attending an international American school, right? So like my lens in terms of what I perceived as normal or right were very different, I'm sure, from what my mom accepted as a child of what the norms were in her family, right? Family practice or whatever.
Yeah. There's so many layers there now, go.
Sorry.
No, why are you
A
off
lot.
there?
No, I mean, like, there's a lot. Yeah, we can't, like, this is for another deeper conversation about being third, what is it? Third culture kids,
Third
right?
culture
Like,
kids,
we,
yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, in the paradox, I think that the thing that I was trying to articulate last episode was this. You know, growing up being attending an international school and have these Western values and adamant about being seen and loved unconditionally for who I was, that concept is so foreign or not even existent in my mom's eye, right? Or my mom's mind, that doesn't exist. Like, what are you talking about? Of course, there's yeah, I don't think she can fathom that type of unconditional love, right? And so I was adamant about receiving that from my parents, and yet the paradox I was able to kind of reflect on since our last episode was that I was adamant about receiving that kind of unconditional love, but I wasn't able to give that unconditional love, like, to in terms of my parents or my mom, like, I wasn't accepting her for who she was, right? It's this Western thinking of righteousness over her values, I guess. And so I'm finally at 44 coming to terms with that. Like, I think I have been in the last 10 years, I think, really trying to not. Is it minimize? Not minimize, but like her values and respect that for equally respect it. I don't believe the things that she does. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I'm all over the place, but
No, you are. I think the revealing thing is, no, not to simplify it, but where I'm trying to kind of compartmentalize it to further understand is that there is a beauty in our 40s, because we're yeah, midlife. I know you don't like mid no, you don't like midlife crisis. So I'm allowed to say midlife, but like midlife, is such a 40s is yeah, a period of discovery. I'm not trying to, you know, umbrella an age, decade or so, but I think there is a pattern of behavior for many of us humans, mothers, daughters, of really truly finally coming to realize, you know, all the things that we've learned and putting into practice, and we still have a lot of ways to go, but we're certainly better than when we were in our teens, 20s, and 30s. And I had two questions for you that I wanted to end on. The first one is, like, what are you unapologetic for at 44? Because you made me think, like, you know how I'm like, in our Asian culture, yeah, like, sumimasen for or sorry for, and I think there's part of culture and etiquette that you have to say that, but then I think you've made me realize, like, there are points where you don't have to be apologetic. So I'm kind of like getting, it's kind of like to me too, but to right back at you is like, what are you on a, can you think of anything that you are unapologetic for?
I don't think I'm there yet. I want to get to a place where I can be unapologetic about who I am. I'm not there yet. I think I'm still working through a lot of things.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where I wanna be, unapologetically me. I think I have it sometimes, but I don't have it all the time.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Yeah, there's no right or wrong answer.
Of course.
And
what about you?
Well, that's the theme to our podcast too, is being present. And I think that that's the kind of like medium of our conversation is that's what we're headed towards, to discovering our unapologetic self.
Yes.
And I think comes from that is you can't do it alone. You need people whom you can trust and love, who will support you too on that journey. But anyway, so mine was super tactical, and it's because I had like this Instagram live session yesterday. It was tactical, not in terms of like this profound self thing, but opinions. So my unapologetic opinion at the moment is I think tea bags are awful, and I'm not going to apologize for that, for having that opinion. Like prior, because I've had the tea career, I've had to be a people pleaser and business pleaser. But now I'm like, yeah, I'm at a good place to say, if you're drinking tea bags, you better darn get rid of them. Or you better not buy them anymore. And I have.
Yes.
So that's,
I like the latter, because, you know, hate to admit it, but we do have tea bags. What I can try to commit to is not buy anymore. So don't judge us.
No, it's everything is like ignorance and lack of understanding. Like and then once you, and everything that we do, it's like, oh, I had no idea. So, and then secondly, of course, I'm going to end it on food.
Yes.
The question of the day: what food can you not live without?
What food can't live without?
I love how you're stumped.
Oh, can't live without. Yappa rice kana.
Hey, 本当に?
I mean, I'm thinking about like, what is it that I eat most often, right?
I've like, never seen you eat rice.
What?
Like, you definitely make rice. No doubt. You've made, you know, temaki sushi and entertained and what have you, but I have personally not seen you eat rice. I think you're more of a noodle person.
Oh, I like noodles too. What can I? What is your answer? Let me ponder some more. I'm curious what your answer is.
Chocolate.
Really? Body so you love chocolate. Wow. Can't live without. So, wow. It's interesting that I don't have anything that like pops, right? Like,
you know,
live without this, do you know? Nai.
I know. I'm actually not surprised with that answer. Somehow,
I love so many things. Like, it's not one thing that I just so love. Like, so that's why it becomes like a basic, like, tsumanai rice.
Yeah.
But
it's cool. Well, you kind of, it's funny. Am I assuming you took the question, what food can you not live without, to kind of like a functional level?
Yeah. Okay. But let's just do, yeah.
Versus what's emotional.
Oh, when... emotional. Well, I think like kimchi toka.
Ah, yahari.
I mean, I don't eat it every day because nobody else eats it. sadly, it's only, you know, I can't share it. Hopefully Mina will like it when she's older. But I mean, when my mom's here and she makes it, Mina likes my mom's. but like Nijia's store-bought kimchi, she's like not, she doesn't care for. So, but Korean, I guess, I can't live without some of the things that like my mom makes. I think about like, well, if she can't send it to me, then I'm never gonna be able to enjoy this.
Okay. This is the amazing thing about food is that you have this intergenerational culture and heritage that was not passed down to you, whether, you know, through language or family stories, because, right, you don't know why your great-grandparents immigrated to Japan, as an example. On the other hand, you have this uniquely distinctive Korean ethnic food for, that's how I can't believe, because we have to explain it in English. Ethnic food. But you know what I'm saying is like kimchi is so Korean. And that has been passed down generation to generation to generation. And your body knows. Your senses know, right? Your flavor, your sensorial experience know, like, what mom's comfort is or grandma's food is. That's the beauty of food.
It's a huge responsibility if you put it that way to like pass that on to Mina. Like, oh my goodness, like things, but that's the responsibility, right? Like, if we want to cherish those things, and ma dekiru ka wakannai kedo, because some things are just so hard.
Sweetie, I will have an interview podcast with Mina. Naoko and Mina, like Naoko, me and Mina, and you'll probably be surprised at how much she loves about your cooking.
Yeah, and I guess I have to let it, that's like being the third culture kid. I was talking to Tim about it, that we can't feel bad about or feel guilty or things that we lose through the generation. Like, I cannot cook like my mother. I can cook only like myself, and there's something lost there, but it's also something gained because it's something new and something me. And so that we have to, I guess I can't feel bad or guilty about not being able to kind of hold on to some of those things, that I have to let go and just embrace like us as a family, and this is how we do it, and as much as we can, you know, honor our heritage and our culture too. But it's a fine line, no? Isn't it hard too? I don't know, how do you see it?
No, I see it as yes. I think it's well said. let go. Perfect.
Easier said than done, though.
Yeah, だからそれでいいの。Yay! Okay, so what are you making for the day?
Don't know about dinner yet, but lunch, Mina's two classmates are coming over and I'm doing yakiniku, so Korean barbecue over rice. So basically, yakiniku, karubi don, right?
Dang! Nani? What'd you say?
No, karubi don, like, yeah. Yeah. You know how we spoke about please. It the other time.
I know, seriously, yes, please. Okay.
And you?
Mine is going to be, you know how the great cooks, I think this is where my mom, my mom is amazing in that she makes her own food, especially. I mean, she's 81 and she still cooks for herself. And it's so nutritional and tasty at the same time. Mm. But my point is, I think the best home cooks really utilize what they have in their fridge. Right? Because you have to be economical about it.
Yeah, I'm not that cook. Sadly, I admire cooks like that, that can just like, okay, I have this and this and this, and what can I whip up?
Yeah, so I kind of, I just coin it like semi-homemade too. Mm. Like semi-homemade is fine. So I take this Costco sirloin beef, that's sous vide beef that my hubby bought. And I'm just going to change it up. I'm going to spice it up by like using taco seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
You just must, it's already cooked. It's already pre-cooked and it's like shrunk wrapped. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So it's still like red. The meat is still red, but cooked. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to rub it with taco seasoning and then probably put it on a bed of rice.
Nice.
Or sorry, salad. I meant salad.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mm. Okay. Bye-bye, King.
Lots of love.
Lots of love.